Let's go!
Rodgers complete. Touchdown, Green Bay, with Jordy Nelson. Rodgers, oh, wide open! And it's Nelson again for the touchdown.
That was the fourth touchdown pass by Aaron Rodgers in what was an easy Green Bay victory, 35-14 over the Chicago Bears on Thursday Night Football. And no, you know, that's not the beautiful low voice of Dan Hansis that you hear. This is Greg Rosenthal. I am kicking off this week's podcast solo, and I'm going to get over to Dan and Mark very shortly because there's not that much to talk about in this game. Very comfortable. 14-0 lead for the Packers before the Bears even ran a second offensive play. A nightmare game for Mike Glennon, who could have been starting his final game for the Chicago Bears, and a perfect game for Aaron Rodgers, who was missing his two offensive linemen and lost a lot of teammates throughout the game. Devontae Adams most notably took a vicious hit to the head by the Bears linebacker Danny Trevathan, who I believe could get suspended for the hit. Thankfully, Adams has feeling in all his extremities. Post-game reports from the Packers coach Mike McCarthy were very positive, so that's good news. But the Packers are hurting right now. Ty Montgomery, their starting running back, had broken ribs. His backup, Jamal Williams, got an injury. They lost an inside linebacker in Joe Thomas. So they have to be very happy to just survive this early portion of the season at 3-1. They haven't dug a big hole like they did in previous years, and it's because Aaron Rodgers can manage things and throw beautiful passes like the deep one to Jordy Nelson down the field. That's all they needed tonight because the Packers defense shut down the Bears running game. Very impressive. And Glennon had a sack fumble to start the game. That wasn't all on him. A fumble bouncing off his knee. That was just kind of funny to watch. And two ugly interceptions. That was on him. I think they need Mitchell Trubisky to enter this season and possibly save the running game because he can get out on the edge. He can run a bootleg. Tony Romo did a great job pointing that out. And this Bears offense just needs a little more juice. Mike Glennon is not providing it. Bears fall to 1-3. And let's just hope the rest of the week four slate is a little bit better. And for that, let's send it over to Dan and Mark and me.
The Around the NFL podcast has the best looking producer.
And welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by Head & Shoulders. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys? Hi-yo.
I find it interesting that the producers essentially give our voiceover specialist, Matt Money Smith.
The keys to the car are coming from the producer to Matt.
And yeah, it's interesting that our producer, Blues Cannon, Erica Tamposi, handed that one over.
Well, it's a very Tamposi-esque move, as we've come to learn. And I can only envision her standing beside Matt Money Smith, the radio voice of the Los Angeles Chargers, maybe with some sort of a weapon or a gun by his head,
right
saying,
his back.
You
say
will
it.
Say this.
Say it.
Big shots fired at Sully, by the way, who is a very handsome man.
Did you have anything to do with that, Erica?
I tweeted it out. People just tweeted me what they wanted for money tags. Oh, so.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Fair enough. This is the Thursday.
Hey, Posty's like, and I'm going on a date with that person. Yeah, great guy.
Week four preview show, and what you heard at the top of this episode was Greg breaking down the Bears and Packers, but that's not the only game this week.
So you're saying Mark didn't come back in for work for that one?
No, he curled up with or seven glasses of red wine and just enjoyed the football
game. I systematically do not appear here on Thursday nights. I have been enjoying these games with Chris Wessling, so try telling me your assignment has more meaning.
I actually have also been with Chris Wessling for two of the 3 weeks, and then I, hop on the bus and come in here and read the hit, and then thumb it home. That's
you,
what I did.
It's you and Mark.
Is, you have never been on a bus.
It's you and Mark.
You have never been on an LA bus in your life.
And I never will.
That is what.
That's
I
what
have.
I know. I'm getting out of town. If you ever put me on the LA bus, I'm out of here.
You're just like you. You're sitting next to Mark Ortega, and you're on the bus on the way to work.
So. A lot of other games to get to. In fact, this is another week. No buys this week. Am I right? I'm right, right?
That's right.
They do not start yet.
All right. So
not next week either, I don't
15 games to talk about.
And the buys start next week, actually.
Okay.
I see the Saints have a bye right off the bat. We know the buys are kicking in.
Post-London.
post-London makes sense, as is their right. Some teams refuse it, Mark.
Well, the Dolphins are saying, let's create the most brutal month of travel in NFL lore, so we will play again next week coming back from London.
Yeah. Okay, so many games to get to. Anything else we want to touch on before we get into the games? Greg?
Let's do some football.
Wearing that Henley today? Feeling a little...
That's right.
Office cadge in a big spot. Like it. All right, let's do some football. And
We're not on camera.
I have one thing I had to say.
Yeah.
Today, or this week, is the 1 year anniversary of Mr. Flame joining us as a sponsor. And I have one follow-up question for you, Mark.
Okay.
You like money?
Of course I like money.
Would you like more of it?
I would.
Well, then sign up for Mr. Flame's economics class in The Hague, the Netherlands, where you can learn all about economics. Like Mark, perfect example. 9 times 6, what?
54.
54 is right. But if you take Mr. Flame's economics class, you'll know more like Greg. Greg, 9 times 8.
72.
See? Have you been in Mr. Flame's class?
Of course.
Yeah, there you go. It all checks out.
He rattled that out in an instantaneous fashion.
That's what economics classes are about. Okay?
I think it's about much more, but that's the base part of an economic class.
I majored in journalism. I stayed away from a lot of this sector of college education. Mr. Flame, secondary school educator in The Hague, the Netherlands. www.flameclass.com. All the details you need. Mr. F.
Mr. F.
All right, let's get into the games, everybody. And we will start with, I just brought them up, the Saints. They have a bye. And let me tell you something. Two bad losses to open their schedule. And they really, really nice job last week against the Panthers. A thorough win on the road, exactly what they needed. They were desperate for that. They got that win. Now they come home to face the Dolphins, who, let's face it, and my goodness, Adam Gase was furious.
They go to London, of course.
This will be in London. Adam Gase was furious with his Dolphins team, Greg. In fact, he made no attempt to hide how angry he was. You want to get into that a little bit before we get into the game?
Well, he called them a garbage offense. he said he's tired of that garbage. And he said he's sick of this for 2 years. I think he was referencing last September when they started very slowly, and he famously fired a few offensive linemen and got after it in the media. And he made the same sort of angry statements after the Jets game and really throughout the week, saying, like, we can't even pick up a first down. And after watching that game, that Jets-Dolphins game, you know, I don't blame him. That was about as sloppy as it gets from Jay Cutler on down. It wasn't just Cutler. It was a lot of players.
It's weird to watch. And they talk about Jay Ajayi behind the scenes as being like a total alpha male. So I think it's a way to challenge your team and bring him back to reality. But if he has one argument, it's that where is the consistency from week to week? Because 2 weeks ago in Los Angeles at the StubHub Center, Jay Ajayi is running well. They weren't perfect, but they were making plays through the air. Jay Cutler looked – you come out of that game thinking he's built chemistry with his wide receivers. The Jets game, a team that we roundly dismissed heading into this season, dominated Miami's offensive line.
And should still roundly dismiss. The Jets aren't going to be a playoff team this year, which makes it all the more mind-boggling. I wrote down in my notes when I was rewatching the game that the Dolphins were scary flat. There's flat, and then there's what happened at the Meadowlands with the Miami Dolphins. And it really makes you can make an excuse, oh, man, it was a trap game. Like, who are the Dolphins?
They had 47 yards at the end of the third quarter, and that makes this game all the bigger in London. And Jay Ajayi coming home, it is a huge moment for Jay Ajayi and for international football. He is the best player that's really had the flag of the UK, and I know he's like early in what I think is going to be a really good career, but he's got to be feeling like this is a big spot for
him. I mean, how exciting must that be?
And you get to play the Saints in what should be a comeback game against a defense that looked better last week, but certainly can give up some yards on the ground.
I'll give you either of you guys a free soda downstairs. Even though the soda machine is eating my dollars, it's eating $2 now. And I just posted a sign on the Pepsi machine. Don't I eat money.
I read this.
I'm going up to HR with that one. Anyway, I'll give you guys a soda once that machine gets fixed. If you can name the other two international England players in the league.
I'm waiting for Greg to answer.
Kassim Adebale, or is he German?
I know it's not our boy Mo Boringer.
I don't know the answer. I was looking at the wrong paperwork. So we'll never know.
All right,
we'll never know.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
We'll never know. But yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if the Dolphins bounce back. I expect that they will. I also saw some bad Jay Cutler, Chicago Bears late period Jay Cutler that you have to keep an eye on.
Well, I'd be more worried that he's just not as talented as he was before, because this was a guy who really relied on his great arm strength and his athletic ability to make up for maybe some other areas. Maybe he wasn't, you know, the guy who's figuring everything out pre-snap. And the last couple weeks, especially against the Jets, I started to wonder, is he just losing it a little bit? Because some of those throws where he's on the move didn't have the same zip. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball is a 38-year-old who through 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I do the QB index grade. Top two quarterbacks in the league are Tom Brady and Drew Brees, 40 and 38. How about that?
Yeah.
This is a great game for the Saints to get back to 2-2 and reset what had been a terrible start.
And against the Dolphins secondary that gave up big plays through the air to Josh McCown and the Jets. It made the Jets look very competent on all phases.
Last quick point is Marshawn Lattimore is going to be back for this game, and in the first 2 weeks, he really looked like he's the best cornerback the Saints have had in a long time. That'll be big for them.
And God, did they need that for years. All right, here are the England players. Ready? We all know about Jay Ajayi. Don't forget about Jermaine Ealer-Manor of the Baltimore
Ravens. He literally just played there last week. I think it was the first game he got on the field, and he was a backup lineman that did play a little for the Ravens in London last week.
What about Alex Gray?
Didn't know that.
Alex Gray,
a very
strategic and talented player.
Wasn't that a singer?
Tying a nice little bow on that seg.
Wasn't that a singer-songwriter from the UK?
Maybe. All right, let's move on. Maybe, Greg, you could research that.
David Gray is
David Gray,
of.
Great
David
album.
Gray,
he had
of course.
Won a killer album, by the way.
This year's Love It
Well,
Last.
I had a past relationship where, I don't know if people still do, it was like, that was our album for some reason. Then the whole thing crashed and burned really
White
hard.
Ladder was your album? That was a huge college album for me. And I think it's one of the biggest Irish albums ever, and he's not even an Irish.
It has some menacing, it brings up some menacing, positive and menacing feelings for myself.
I thought people had songs, a whole album.
We went full
That's
album.
Excessive.
We went full album.
That sounds like a passionate relationship.
Let's move on to the next game.
Tell us more about the...
He's playing at the Greek Theater on October 17th here in L.A. if you want
By
to
By the
go
way,
see him.
You know
I've
who
seen
else
Dave
is Grayline. Playing?
Who?
In L.A., very, very soon, I believe it's the 13th of October.
Who?
Debbie, who is little Debbie.
The small Debbie?
Yes.
Whoa.
Mildly okay. Small Deborah.
Tracking that. Moving on. Here we go. The Buffalo Bills look real good. They look highly competent, at the very least, at home, a 26-16 win over the Denver Broncos. 2-1, surprising some people. And now a real test. Here we go. The Atlanta Falcons, 3-0. But let me say this, Mark. I'll start with you here on this one, Mark. Falcons are 3-0. But if you're watching these games, the Falcons can easily have two losses right now. And in general, this team looks a lot different than last year's team. Is that fair to say?
I think they might on Sunday when they play the best defense they will have faced all season to this point. The Bills' defense, highly impressive. Because the week before, I think this game where they went in and handled the Broncos in week three. When we talk about all the bizarre week three results, I think this one's a little underrated because Denver the previous week dropped an A-bomb level hit on the Cowboys to the point where we thought, whoa, Denver looks like they're going to scorch right back into the AFC title game.
First
potentially.
First Tesla A-bomb reference of the season.
It was that kind
Overdue.
Of a game, right? I mean, they leveled the Cowboys. And so a week later, and I think that Buffalo is an underrated place to have to go in and play number one, and it's in Atlanta, so that's not a factor here. But this game to me is a very interesting matchup because I watched how Buffalo, took C.J. Anderson, the engine of Denver's offense, right out of it from the very beginning. He had one sort of longer run the entire affair, And what it did was it put Trevor Siemian, who's been so promising all season, into endless third down, overt, obvious passing situations. And it held up for a while, but then suddenly they started to completely lose their chemistry through the air. Two killer picks by Siemian ended that game. And Buffalo's defense, listen, LeSean McCoy cannot run the ball right now. They are not the team from last year where they were Anthony Lynn's little pet project to run as much as possible. They have to win in a different way.
So dismissive of the number one running team in the league.
Well, no, but I think that Sean McDermott quietly is – there's two Seans kind of vying for potential rookie coach of the year or coach of the year honors. And Sean McDermott, the team that everyone had wiped off their map – in August, is playing very hard for him.
Well, that's not a real award, Coach of the Year.
But it maybe is now.
It would be by Mark. He loves them coaches. You're absolutely right. Think of what – I love the fact that the aspect of coaching that Sean McDermott was known for in Carolina, which is putting together some spare parts in the secondary, is exactly what's happening in Buffalo. Tre'Davious White was named the NFL Defensive Player of the Month. Late first-round pick, immediately making a huge impact. Jordan Poyer, a former Cleveland Brown, which was just kind of a scrap heap guy no one even thought about, is making plays week after week. Last year, under Rex, they were middle of the pack in points allowed. Right now, they are number one in points allowed. I don't think they will be after this game. Part of it is because of the schedule they've played. I'm not that worried about the Falcons. I know they're not as explosive, but I think this is a great game, but I'm not that worried about
it. I wouldn't go as far as saying I'm worried about them. Did I say worried? Because I didn't really mean that.
No, you
I
said just, they're a different, you know, they haven't been dominant.
I don't sense like sheer panic
yeah,
coming
they're
off
they're wildly fortunate to be undefeated. I mean, a lot of teams, I think there's only two undefeated teams left, and a lot went down.
But they've been pretty good, though.
They've been pretty good.
They're one of the only teams, at least you kind of know what you're getting every week. A nice, solid 375, 400-plus yards of offense. They're going to be in the game. You're right, they're not that.
Not worried about the offense. And Matt Ryan, three interceptions. He's on the downslope or something. He's not going to be like last year. He didn't have a bad game last week. I think some of those picks you don't really have to put on Matt Ryan. But I'll be very interested to see how they play at home against a Bills team. You know, we go through a season. Same thing happened last year where we all get collectively excited about certain defenses, and then as the season goes along, they get kind of exposed. I'm not ready to, like, buy in on this Bills defense. I expect the Falcons to score points.
I do too.
30-plus and win this game comfortably.
I don't, because I think Tyrod and LeSean McCoy, I watch McCoy and he looks good. I don't think it's him. He's not putting up numbers, but he's playing well. And the respect that Tyrod Taylor gets in terms of the running game, there was one play last week I just want to point out quickly.
Sure.
Where Von Miller is coming right at Tyrod Taylor, has a free run at him, and he kind of hesitates and starts playing basketball defense on him because he's afraid Tyrod's going to try to run by him. But instead, Tyrod going to his left, throws against his body 30 yards down the field. No one else is making that play. Tyrod Taylor's making that
play. And
I
noticed the same. I get it. You watched that game last week. He'll miss these short to medium throws that probably drive you crazy as a Bills fan, but the guy makes plays every week. Moving on. AFC North battle, and an interesting one between the Steelers and Ravens. If you go back in the last, let's say, 10 years or so, or, yeah, I guess 9 years or so, the Joe Flacco era, when that began, no teams play closer games than the Ravens and the Steelers. I don't know where they're sending Jim and Tony Romo this week. I think they should send him to this AFC
probably
North
Raiders
matchup.
Broncos, because that's a solo 425 game. I'm pretty sure.
Probably that
that's
makes
how,
sense.
That's how TV operates.
But that wouldn't be my choice. I think this is going to be a great game. And, Mark, both teams are coming off absolute stinkers last week.
Well, obviously, a difficult week for Pittsburgh, and a lot of strange stuff occurred. But I watched that Ravens game yesterday during a quiet spot at work. Totally impressed with the Jaguars. The Ravens, to me, look
like
they had been –
Tell us about this quiet spot.
Well, just, not a lot of news happening on a Wednesday mid-afternoon.
So it wasn't a physical spot. It was more spot in the day's calendar?
In my desk.
Gotcha.
And so my takeaway from Baltimore is that was the entire team on the flight over to London abducted by aliens for like a week? Physical experiments go on, and then they land and go on with the game. They looked completely out of it. And it was – I cannot explain what happened to the defense – against the Jacksonville Jaguars, except that it started with Leonard Fournette dominating them. So is this the week that finally we get Le'Veon Bell back in the mix? If not, I don't even know if I'd be surprised because of what we saw earlier from Baltimore this season.
I think they're 31st in yards per carry right now, the Steelers. So that's insane. I don't know how good this Ravens defense is yet. We thought they were good going into the season. You know, they did give up 386 yards to the Browns too. So I want to see it. This is such a big game, especially for Baltimore, to get that stink off them from last week, the worst game of Flacco's career, and to get a little revenge for the last time these two teams played the game of the season last year, that Antonio Brown stole the hearts. Who knows? It could have been the Ravens in the AFC Championship game, if not for that game. And you're at home. I feel like this is a game that's just a big, big game for the Ravens. More so than the Steelers.
I think it has to go well for them to their offense. As disastrous as the defense was last week, I mean, their offense has operated as a three and out machine. It's a tough watch.
Last in the league in yards and points.
It is tough to watch, and it starts with Joe Flacco.
I think
not healthy.
The Steelers were flat last week, but the Ravens, yeah. I think the Ravens, this is the team to keep an eye on, how they bounce back from this game, how Joe Flacco bounces back. We talked about it on Sunday's show, Greg, that he looked okay in week two, and it made you think, okay, well, Joe's going to be okay. And then this happens. It was was week two the fluke-o? You know, like, what is the Flacco? What's the Fluco right now? That's what you've always wondered, what this has been getting at, Greg.
Yeah.
Where is this heading towards? When we talk about franchise quarterback in 2017 that could get teams big wins at home against a rival, you got Joe Flacco, or you got Joe Fluco? He's got to produce, Greg.
And I think the Steelers are close to breaking out. I'm not that worried about the Steelers. I like the Steelers to go to Baltimore and win this game, getting away. Their run defense caved in last week against Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, the three straight runs for 76 yards at the end. And the Ravens running game is really the most positive thing about this team right now. It's really been consistent. One of the best running games in the league, despite not a lot of talent on paper. But I like this Steelers team better. I think they go and they rip the hearts out of
the
Ravens.
It concerns me when I watch a Ravens defense that is biting over and over on play action fakes from Blake Bortles.
Yeah, I'm willing to kind of throw it out, but we'll see.
I am too.
If it's another stinker, then we have something to talk about. And one last note, the Steelers.
Are you going to pick this game, AFC North? Come on, Mark.
Give us a pick.
I'm going to do more than pick it.
What? Wait, did Greg remind you that you had something going on?
He inspired me.
Oh, inspired.
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
You need this, Mark.
I am on board with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, I like it.
Oops. As a team
Sorry,
that is
going
to go into Baltimore. And I am so bad at lock it up that I'm going to have to say they're going to lock it up.
Congratulations, Ravens, getting off the snide after
well,
a tough
I
week.
Well, I mean, I'm getting tweeted at from people saying, please pick Team X that my
so
team is playing.
So if I didn't say anything there, to be clear, you would have not have locked it up.
I mean, that might explain a lot.
You never know where it's going to drop.
And one last note, the Steelers.
I'm with you, though.
An unprecedented week. I mean, every team, what's going on with Trump and the national anthem and the kneeling and these protests, this idea that every team has its own situation going on. The Steelers, if you followed them all week, there's so much going on with them, more than other teams even perhaps. And you want to see how they come out and play this week, if this has become a distraction for them. We have no idea if it was a distraction last week, but they were very flat last week.
Definite storyline.
After everything that happened, a storyline. Two-track, moving on.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's kind of a cliche, but I'm going to use it anyway. Let's talk about the toilet bowl.
The 0-3 Cincinnati Bengals traveling to...
That is not a cliche. That is an insult.
The Cincinnati Bengals at home. No, where are we?
They are traveling to Cleveland
to face the winless... Don't shrug. Don't put your hand out, Greg. Like, how did you not know which
team
was home?
You know, the team on the right. It's always
that's what I thought, but then I saw an at somewhere else. Yeah, don't worry about your own stuff.
Claiming there is no home field advantage for the Browns.
Cincinnati,
I see what you did there.
Cleveland, 2-0-3 teams. History tells us that the season is over for both teams in terms of the playoffs, but that doesn't mean that's how it plays out. There's always outliers. But what we do know is, the team that loses this, I don't think we're doing the fork segment this year. You could say goodbye to that team, and we'll start with you on this one, Mark. The Bengals probably are further along, but if you look at statistically, they've been even worse than the Browns.
What concerns me watching what happened with Cleveland against Indianapolis, and also 2 weeks prior, Antonio Brown fried them for 182 yards. T.Y. Hilton dominated their secondary for 153. They're doing this thing where they put rookie safety Jabril Peppers deep back like a center fielder, And the idea is you're going to take away the big plays. But number one wide receivers have had nothing but big plays against Cleveland. Now you have A.J. Green, and I think that A.J. Green's, you know, the one he's been positive for Cincinnati despite the fact that too much of their offense runs through him. I don't like the combination of A.J. Green against the secondary and what feels like finally Joe Mixon under Bill Lazor, clearly their number one running back. And the combination of potentially a breakout Joe Mixon game with A.J. Green dealing with Cleveland's
you
secondary.
You stealing my breakout Joe Mixon prediction? You could have it. You want to share it?
I mean, I would
share.
I will actually just give it to you, but I just feel – because, by the way, this would be the, roughly, in my fandom of the Browns, the 83rd running back that's broken out against Cleveland. So it's not a new thing.
Let's talk – we should talk about this because at 0-3, it's been a disappointing start given the optimism in the offseasons for the Browns. This is against Cincinnati, another winless team. If the Browns lose this game at home – we talked a little bit about this on Tuesday show – might get a hot butt situation here with Hugh Jackson, which would be shocking that that could even be thought of before October comes. But at a certain point, you need some type of results, and we don't have them right now.
Well, real quick, I would say it's been just as disappointing to start for Cincinnati, but you have a rookie quarterback, and I honestly, the fans are going to start to get hot buddy about Hugh Jackson
hot
and the
buddy?
Browns. But
it's
inside
not
the building.
A correct they, use of hot buddy.
No, but they went into this season with a rookie quarterback. You cannot make decisions after week four.
No, it is.
Well, I'm not saying he's going to get fired,
I'm just saying.
The talk is going to start.
It's from a fan angle.
You follow this,
from a fan angle, it already has.
You follow the team extremely closely. You check in on different websites and everything. Are the fans still behind Hugh at this point?
I think the biggest issue is apathy. But the second is to concern that the plan is maybe not taking hold.
You watch Deshaun Kizer, and there's no sustaining throws in their offense. It's all boom or bust, but it is so much fun to watch him. I mean, he is exciting. Last week, you know, their defense gave up four touchdowns in consecutive drives, I believe, to the Colts. So, I mean, the defense was a huge part of that collapse. Kizer does so much good. I mean, he fills up the box score. He is making crazy plays. He makes plays that drive you crazy. He's a fun guy. He's an exciting player to watch. And I think overall what he showed in the preseason has come with him to the regular season. And if he can get a little more help, I think there were six drops last week. Certainly the defense didn't play well.
Is there any quarterback getting more killed?
I think he's doing a lot. I think the getting killed part, no, is on him. Almost all the time, it's him holding on. Like, you can count. He's got to get rid of the ball. Teams are blitzing him because they see that they're not handling it well, and that's a problem of having a rookie quarterback. He's not – you know, you don't know how to set the protections. You got a new center there, too, and guys are just getting in on him. That's partly on
the
quarterback.
Well, there's that. I was going to say, is there any quarterback getting victimized more by his own wide receivers? Eight drops last week and some terrible drops. It's just – you know.
And some crazy plays. I mean, the Kenny Britt touchdown was – we've killed Kenny Britt. This is one of the plays of the year. By old Kenny.
Tyler Eifert not playing for Cincinnati, and you wonder if there's a crisis of confidence thing going on with Andy Dalton, who's really struggled this season. We'll see. He should be able to move the ball against Cleveland. If he doesn't, you start to wonder about A.J. McCarron.
From where we are right now, there is a chance Myles Garrett could make his debut. He's practicing.
Something to track. All right, moving on. Here's a great game, and a game that maybe in August no one would have circled and said, oh, this is going to be a good one. Well, it could be, though, because the Los Angeles Rams, 2-1. Nobody has scored more points than the Rams this year. In fact, they have two games out of their first three with more than 40 points, which is crazy, man, because they were last in scoring last year, and now they go to Big D. They face Dallas, got it done against Arizona after that humbling loss to the Broncos. And Greg, Todd Gurley, to me, is a lot. Jared Goff's getting a lot of praise, which he deserves because he's played a lot better. But Todd Gurley so far, at least to me, ranks as one of the nicer surprises that he seems to have shook off what was a long slump and is again a big-time player.
He played with such confidence in that Thursday night game, and this is a game where you want to see if they can keep it going because their offensive line is playing well, better for him. Andrew Whitworth has been right there at left tackle, certainly in pass protection as you know the best pickup of anyone in free agency all year. The fact that he really wanted to get out of Cincinnati.
Just did you forget about Josh McCown?
I'm going to go give it to Whitworth.
All right.
Very close.
And you want to see, because I don't think this is a Cowboy. This is a Cowboys team where the defense needs to keep them in games more. It's not going to be as explosive a Cowboys offense as in the past.
I'm still a little concerned by the Cardinals game where Dallas's defense gave up back-to-back like 8-minute drives to start the thing. It's not the total picture because their pass rush is certainly, with DeMarcus Lawrence, like a completely dominating beast right now. They're able to take care of quarterbacks. But I just look at the Rams and say, honestly, this team to me, Todd Gurley told Michael Irvin, they have confidence. They never seem to have this confidence under Jeff Fisher on offense. He told Michael Irvin, we're going to whoop up on the boys. That's kind of a crazy thing that you never thought you would have heard from the Rams offense coming out of week three.
You don't like that, right? You don't like
that. I don't
that type
like
of
I think
that,
well I don't think it's like if I went out on the internet and like hit up every opposing podcast and was like, we're so much better than you and like added
well,
you guys. It's a little ridiculous.
For context, but. it was on the it was in the post game show and Michael
awesome,
Irvin
actually.
Yeah, I would
please
do
that.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Irvin was sitting there and kind of gave him some, you know, grief or whatever. Oh, you got to play my Cowboys. And so he's responding. I love that. I love how confident he's playing. I'd like to be more confident in Wade Phillips and the Rams defense. They need to step up against a Cowboys group that hasn't been the same either. Dak Prescott is learning what it's like for most young quarterbacks. Suddenly his protection's not perfect. It's okay. But Lyle Collins on the right side, everyone told me, well, that's a big upgrade. All right, let's see. No, he's really struggled. I wonder if they reconsider that contract they gave him.
Wow.
And Dak Prescott's learning what it's like to not really have much of a running game either. They've been an okay running game, not a great running game, and not an explosive element down the field. Hmm. Get this deep.
Unless I misunderstood what you said earlier, Greg, are you confident in saying that you just don't think this offense is going to be good as
last year? Oh, no. I think they'll get
year?
Better. Okay. I don't think they're going to be as good as last
year. They're not there yet, certainly, and maybe they'll never get there, but you say it could still happen.
I don't think they're going to get to last year's level, no. But I think that's like the Falcons. They were just on such another worldly level.
Yes, that's true.
One
no
quick
chance.
Thing on Dez. Janoris Jenkins, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, Patrick Peterson. That's who you dealt with so far. I do think there's a chance that he turns the corner.
Old Dez
some point.
Used to get his
I get it. I'm not saying he's Dez from 2012 or something.
He's not that old. It's not like Dez is 34.
Here's one thing, though. He's out there just one-on-one. There's no – you know, I was watching Peterson in that game, and they were just out there one-on-one. And that's – receivers want that situation.
Also, a little bit of a different take. On Tuesday's show, Greg, you said that Bryce Butler started to pipe up about he wished he had more fantasy points, and then Dez is like, settle down, young buck.
Yeah.
Like – how about the idea that he's to himself? He's like, what did he have? Two catches for 11 yards?
Two for 12, yeah.
Like, maybe he's annoyed because Bryce Butler is honking about 3 for 90 and that not being good enough. And, like, what happened when I used to be a guy that was at the top of the leaderboards in receiving yards? I wonder if there's some frustration behind the scenes. Although I don't deny he's probably a better leader than he was when he was younger. Well, let's see if he's actually happy with his numbers so far this year and whether he's going to point some fingers.
This is a great game. Step up,
pick
Rams
the game.
Defense. Ooh. I think the Rams defense is going to get better over the course of the season, and they start this week, and they pull off a road upset.
Ooh, 3-1 for the Rams. Hmm. What about you, Mark?
I'm going to go with Dallas. In a game, though, that only builds our confidence in the Rams as a long-term operation.
Okay.
I'll go with the Rams moving to 3-1 as well. Moving on, here we go. The Tennessee – I have to say this. I don't want to, you know, get anybody upset. The Titans.
Well, you're still, you know, you're refusing to
the Tennessee Titans.
Well,
that's respectful.
You can take it up with the fan base.
Is that not respectful?
I think it
Why
gets,
can't you just
it
say
gets
it the
slightly
right way.
Closer
Titans.
To respect.
The Titans.
All right. They got their win at home against the Seahawks, and nice job there. They won two in a row after their opener loss to Oakland. Now they travel to Houston to face the Texans. The Texans came so close. So close to upsetting the Patriots. In fact, as close as you could come. If you rewatch that game, it had to be so painful. And now they get a chance to pull even with the Titans. And Greg, you know, remember Lamar Miller was my boy last summer. I thought he'd be a big player for them. I lost some sandwiches on it. They had a chance to salt that game away against the Patriots and give the Patriots all the credit in the world. They got the stop 3rd and 1 right around the 30-yard line. They needed 1 yard, and they got stuffed. They kicked the field goal and then lost because Brady scored a touchdown. Yeah, I want some onions from Bill O'Brien. I would have went for that because it's like you get 2 chances to get 1 yard, And if you get the 1 yard, Tom Brady can't hurt you.
Game over.
And instead, he played it safe, and he should have known better because he used to coach up there, and then Tommy Boy banged him, even though Tommy Boy needed to get lucky himself for that to happen.
It was a tough one, though. I don't want to get caught up in, you know, reliving that game, but they had made the Patriots punt 3 or 4 straight times at that point.
Still, it's Tom
Brady. And if I was the Texans, I wouldn't be confident in picking up that 1 yard because of the way that game went. What I would have liked to see is get the ball in Deshaun Watson's hand,
yes,
have him rolling out, because he is just something special with the ball in his hands. Just the next level of elusiveness, getting away from defenders. Try to, you know, get him on the edge and try to have one of those Patriots linebackers run after him, and then you're doing okay. If the defense holds up there, Deshaun Watson is the number one non-anthem NFL story of the week. The fact that he went in there and just dropped a hammer. He made some mistakes, but he made some plays to put up 30-plus points in Foxborough.
Absolutely.
Total artistry on the ground, to the point where, I mean, he had the Patriots on ice. Like, every time he had the ball, there were 3 or 4 occasions in that game, and it's going to translate to this Titans game too, where a would-be sacker had almost a hand around or on Watson, and he's skating backwards, doing figure eights. He's floating to his left, to his right. And then, on top of it, he's picking up yardage or finding a guy. There's one pass he made across the field for a first down, and it's like, this is stuff you're seeing. It reminds me of, like, young John Elway, to be honest. Mm. They're not the same style player in every way, but vision across the entire playing field.
You see when his college coach, Dabo Sweeney, said that any team that will pass on him is like passing on Michael Jordan. You could see the best version of what this guy can be just by what we've seen already, that all that ability is there. And if he has the other traits that are necessary in terms of the diligence behind the scenes, the ability to continue to build your game as you get more and more comfortable in the NFL, he really does look like he could become that franchise quarterback that Houston has been looking for really since they became an NFL team. On the other side of the ball, guys, the Titans, are they now, in your eyes, all kidding aside, are you not worried about them? You think this is a team that's going to fulfill that potential, become like an 11-win type team? And if they are, they should be able to beat the Texans, I think.
I think you have to keep winning these. This is the kind of game you have to win if we're going to keep looking at it that way. These teams change from week to week in 2017. I want to see how they handle the Texans pass rush, which
a good test.
Put a hurt on Brady, and they created, there were more turnovers they could have had than they even
right.
did.
I don't want to hear any more about, like, oh, J.J. Watt's struggling, doesn't have a sack this year. He's been great the last 2 weeks. He's getting better every week. The Texans, though, have had two of the toughest losses, I feel like. That was a tough one for them to take, and they admitted it. I mean, in the opener that they lost after the Hurricane, that was a tough one to take, too. And this is going to be a tough matchup because, okay, you know, Deshaun Watson's exciting, but Marcus Mariota is he's maturing. He's turning into that guy that you really trust week after week. I think it's almost been overlooked how good the Titans have been offensively the last 2 weeks. 27 points against the Jaguars on 5 straight possessions. They just went, you know, they just made the Jaguars defense look terrible. 34 points on 6 straight scoring possessions against the Seahawks. I mean, this team is efficient. Every week I write down Adoree Jackson's name, and I always forget to say it. He could be the next great punt returner. Hasn't quite happened in the NFL yet. I love this Titans team.
He's going to have a game where he has like two returns for scores, because he had one called back already, and every time he touches the ball, and I think as a cornerback, it still feels like a lot of up and down with him.
Yeah.
But as a special teams player, my God.
Reminds me a little bit of Tyreek Hill in terms of his return ability and that offense and just everything coming together. I think you smell what I'm cooking right here. Uh-oh. I'm going to lock it up.
I am so happy you did that, Greg, because Deshaun Watson's a special player.
Oh, no.
Special player that's just starting to find his footing. I'm talking, there's potential here for this thing to go airborne, this thing to go rocket ship launch, RG3 2012 type stuff. And then you factor in that defensive front. Oh, J.J. Watt, no sacks. He's never done this. It's been years. No, J.J. Watt, like Greg said, making plays every week, still dominant. And guess what? Sacks come in bunches. J.J. Watt, so overdue to wreck a game. And he's going to wreck pretty boy Marcus Mariota Everybody's like, you don't even pronounce Mariota, 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 whatever. It doesn't matter because give me Deshaun Watson Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Because I'm going to look it up. It's a lock off.
I want to get into this. I'm going to lock up the tie potentially just to have some element. I'll tell you what happens, though. The Texans secondary better show up. They got flamed. How more open could Chris Hogan have been in the game last week?
They
Brandon Cooks, give me a break with that.
This is, I mean, I'll tell you what will happen is if Dan goes down two straight lockoffs to me,
ouch.
It's going to be tough to show up to the podcast.
I don't know how I'll do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I don't know if we still do the segment or what. Or
says the guy
retire in shame.
was so freaked out and anxiety ridden that we had to get rid of the what did we have to drop because of Greg's sensitive heart couldn't handle it?
Multiple
hero
segments.
Picks.
Oh, hero picks.
That was a man like cowering in the face of picks. I will take my beating like a man, but it's not going to happen this week. Come on, Houston Texans. Come on, Deshaun. Let's move on. Getting rid of the hero picks. Listeners love that.
I didn't get rid of it. You've told me many times since you like not picking games. Give me a break.
The Detroit Lions 2-1 tied first in the NFC North. Oh, who they tied with? The Minnesota Vikings. I love this. This is the good stuff. Greg Rosenthal, Sam Bradford going to be out again with this, I'm going to say it, mysterious knee injury. but, you know, everybody wrote off the Vikings last week with Case
Agatha
Keenum.
Agatha Christie.
And then he went off and played the game of his life. Was that kind of a, you know, a shooting star performance and one not to count on again?
I wouldn't count on that type of performance again.
Or anything close to it. Are we going to see more like we've always seen in Case Keenum for the most part?
The talent around him is good enough to lift him up. So if he can get protected, which he did last week, I don't know if it'll happen every week, the receiver combination, and our friend Matt Harmon, I think, pointed this out, and I agree. Right now, Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs might be the best wide receiver duo in the league. Dalvin Cook is one of the better starting running backs already, it looks like, in the league. I mean, maybe not top five or anything, but his ability to kind of press the hole and then bounce outside, that's big. And you have a great defense, and you're at home. That's a lot of support you're giving Case Keenum, and I think he can do enough to win this game with all that support.
Yeah, I mean, they have two games where they came very close to 500 yards on offense, and it's not a fluke. And then I look at, like, Xavier Rhodes and this Vikings secondary, watching them against the Bucs last week. They frustrated Mike Evans. You know, DeSean Jackson didn't really get involved until late in that game. Everyone talked about the Bucs as this explosive, weapons-rich attack that no one could slow down. The Vikings completely removed that passing game from that entire contest.
This is a huge game for Detroit. You're on the road, you're in the division, and you get Case Keenum. Like, if this is the type of team that's thinking, all right, 10-11 wins, or let's compete with the NFC North, this is a big kind of division game that you can pick off early, because it's tough to go to Minnesota, but it's Case Keenum. I mean, you gotta take advantage of an opportunity like that.
Except the Case Keenum threw aggressively last week, and he looked fantastic. That was the most confident Case Keenum first half I've ever seen. I mean, he looked completely in control. I don't know if it's a massive downgrade.
Well, nothing makes sense anymore.
I do.
I mean, I'm just saying, in this offense,
Not
if you put Case Keenum on another team. In this offense.
Over 10 weeks, but for 1 week, maybe, yeah.
If that Case Keenum shows up every week, the Vikings are, first of all, never going to put him back on the bench. Second of all, they might be playing in the Super Bowl in their own building. I just don't see it happen. Let's see him do it again, and then we could talk. Let's move on. The Carolina Panthers. What a tough loss. Got beat up in their own building, and Cam Newton did not look good, throwing three picks. And now they go to New England. Nice setup there for the Throne of Ease by the schedule makers. Get the Panthers in there when they're still figuring out their stuff. Well done.
What does that even mean? We thought we were like they were one of the best teams in the league a week ago.
No, it's just like, should we get Cam? Should we put him? All right, let's figure this out, guys. Should we put the Panthers in New England week 13 when Cam's shoulder's back to normal? Or should we get him in there September when he's just figuring out his stuff and he can't even throw a straight line for 5 yards? Yeah, high fives all around.
That's been a look at the schedule-making backroom operations of the National Football League.
Well, Cam Newton's got one of, if not the strongest arms of the league right now post-surgery. So I don't want to hear about –
it's not about arm strength.
Maybe it's accuracy, about, but he was never.
He is a mess in terms of being able to move a team on a regular basis right now.
I think it's overstated. I think it's the fact that Kelvin Benjamin and Greg Olsen weren't there for them last week, and for an offense that never practiced together all offseason and trying to change things around. Cam could be healthy. He looks healthy to me. He's running pretty well. He throws it pretty well. It's more of a global offensive issue.
I couldn't agree more. I think the minute that Greg Olsen went out, that offense changed. And I'll forget the throne of ease business right now, because, yes, probably I'll be totally wrong, and they'll just sail on to 13-3.
Is he going
to
lock it up?
I ain't locking anything up. Here's what concerns me if I'm a Patriots fan that's had nothing but shiny autumns dating back to freaking pre-9/11. Give me a break. I see a 10-6 team right here.
Whoa.
I see a 10-6 type team, and I'm sure they'll shake it out and figure it all out. But their defense, Patriots defense cannot rush the passer. They got absolutely flamed by Deshaun Watson. They could not handle a mobile quarterback, and I am watching Tom Brady get hit in a way that he has not in a long time. That was a disastrous pass protection game for the Patriots against the Texans.
Well,
disastrous.
Their tackles have struggled all year, and that was my takeaway finally rewatching that. Tom Brady's doing too much. You cannot expect him to play at this level. You just can't. His tackles are struggling. That running game, which I was all jazzed up about going into the season, can you guess what the long run of the New England Patriots are this year?
14.
I'd say eight yards.
Oh, my God.
That's an 8 yard.
That's hard.
But they're also using their running backs as pass catchers.
Absolutely, and that's effective. But they need for a minute, I started to think, like, do they miss LeGarrette Blount a little? I don't know.
They're just so pass heavy.
He'll be back.
Their passing game is phenomenal. Like, what they can do through the air is pretty exciting to watch.
But I don't think it can keep up when if Nate Solder, their left tackle, plays that bad, if they're not getting a running game, if the defense is not playing as well. The 3-4, remember, Bill Belichick he's known for the 3-4, right? He's known for his linebackers.
Yep.
Lawrence Taylor, Carl Banks, and Willie McGinnis, and Teddy Bridgewater. The Patriots don't have any linebackers. They've played with 3 linebackers on the field 5 plays this season. They've played with 1 linebacker on the field for 57 plays, and that's the changing NFL to some degree, but it's also just a thin position.
Is David Harris playing at all?
No, not at all.
Interesting.
He's just buried.
You know, my thoughts, having tracked this Patriots team through, I was going to say good and bad, but like great and good, over the years, is like right now they're first in offense, no surprise, in total yardage, last in defense. That is a surprise. But by the end of the season, I think just the masterful job the coaching staff does, led by Belichick, I would imagine by the end of the year you'll see them kind of in the middle of the pack. Well, maybe I'm wrong. And that's all they really need to get to, and then Tommy will handle the rest. But if you want to pick off the Patriots right now, this is the time to do it. That's why the Houston Texans are going to really – I know they were kicking themselves. They're going to really regret it when the Patriots really round into form. And maybe the Panthers have the same open window to take advantage of the Patriots, who haven't quite figured it out yet.
And they've often struggled with running quarterbacks, including Cam Newton, who had a nice, memorable Monday night win over them 4 years ago.
Let's move on. The Jacksonville Jaguars, who, of course, went to London, to Wembley Stadium. Is this – week's international series game also at Wembley?
Yeah. The Saints game is at Wembley, yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I was asking.
I know. I just wasn't.
I'm just wondering if it maybe went to, Twickenham?
It was essentially Greg. What is the mystery of the Sphinx?
I think the
that's what Greg heard with that question.
The Browns game is at Twicken. I call it Twick. I call it the Twick.
The T.
Anyway, so 44-7, wipeout of the Ravens. Everybody trying to make sense of that one still.
The Twicker.
And then have a Twick.
All right. Hey, let's go meet at Twick.
What? What are we doing? They go to the Meadowlands now to face the Jets. They are favorites in this game. The Jacksonville Jaguars, road favorites. Who would have thunk it? But I'll say this, Greg. The Jets are still a bad team, bad football team. There's just too many holes on the team. But you saw the best version of the Jets against the Dolphins that can make plays on defense, and the veteran quarterback doesn't blow the game up. In fact, makes a couple plays. The idea that Jaguars are going to have an easy win, I don't see 44-7 here by any stretch.
No, I thought about locking this up for the Jaguars, but I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me. I know there's a little part of you that's thinking, ooh, can we be 2-2 coming out of here and be a little fun story?
I would be really, really torn if they won again, because yes,
this is a very winnable game.
As a fan of the Jets, there would be something fun about that. But I still, big picture, know that that would probably hurt
them. For Sam Fabeats, the cornerback out of Texas Southern.
The one thing you want if you're a Jets fan more than anything is some young players to get excited and build around. And Jamal Adams just seems like he's
all over the place.
He's just really a special guy. Like you think of Earl Thomas or something like that. He had those two plays back-to-back last week. And he's done this a few times this season where he'll just make plays in succession. But one where he's covering a receiver going up the slot, and at the last second he sees what Cutler's doing. He peels off. He runs across the field like Superman, flies through the air, and breaks it up. The very next play, he rushes the passer. He's going up against a left tackle. A little safety going up against left tackle. He didn't pass him or anything, but he had kept his eyes on the quarterback, and when he saw the chance, he sprung and he sacked Cutler on that play. I mean, this is next-level stuff. It's got to be exciting.
It's very exciting to have like a young star defender, and the Jets are notorious and unlucky franchise, but two out of the last 4 years, they were at number six on the draft board and ended up getting a guy that could have easily been a top pick in a draft, and Leonard Williams and now Jamal Adams. I think he has that type of potential. He played all over the field, like Greg was saying, cornerback, safety, linebacker. I mean, he did it all, and that's exactly the type of guys you got to build around. Marcus May is the other guy that got talked up this summer. I haven't seen as much as from him, but Adams has really flashed.
When it makes your entire defense better, because a guy like Terrence Brooks, who had a big game, when your safeties are playing
the player of the week.
Yeah, I mean, their whole secondary tackled very well. Give me a break. DeMario Davis, a guy that got traded from the Browns for Calvin Pryor, who's on his fourth or fifth team at this point since then. A guy who's just a dude, right? He played a fantastic game against the Dolphins. But I'll tell you what, on the flip side, you want good secondary play.
Yeah.
A.J. Boye. Jalen Ramsey. You know what they remind me of when I watch them together, the way they dominated last week? A Jags team that ran a fake punt when they're up 37-0. They're feeling themselves.
Hello.
They remind me, and this is going way back, to watching Frank Minifield and Hanford Dixon when the Browns had two cornerbacks that shut teams
down. How old are
you? I am very old. But when the Jaguars can do that, what we're seeing is not a fluke. They are shutting down passing
on
games
defense.
Entirely.
The yes. Jaguars are not a fluke on defense. It's a matter of that Blake Bortles that threw for
right.
like 300 yards in
it
the first
helps
half
when
last
you're
week.
Not down by 25 points when you're a quarterback.
But the Jags are going to win this game, I believe, because I think you're going to need multiple kind of dimensions on offense to move the ball on them with because of Ramsey and Bouye. I think the longest reception Ramsey's given up all year is 8 yards. So I just don't see the Jets having enough dimensions to really score any points.
No, Josh McCown has played very well this season. I think he has a lot of trouble in this game.
And do you like Robbie Anderson?
I
like Elijah McGuire.
Yeah.
I do.
Robbie Anderson's raw.
Robbie Anderson
he's definitely
makes
a playmaker.
Plays,
he might be a knucklehead. I've got my eye on Robbie. Whether he's a guy
that
you build.
That based
build
on?
Well, just okay. Do some research on him. Here we go. Week four, moving on. The San Francisco 49ers traveling to Arizona.
Dan's got a big file of Robbie Anderson.
You know, like Wes. Well,
anyone
Wes has
anyone who's making
file.
Plays for you right now, please.
You know, Wes has his Cincinnati Bengals file. I have my Robbie Anderson file. That's a true story. All right, the Niners 0-3, but you know, almost won last week. That's nice. Scored some points, so you got something to build off at least. And now they got to face the Cardinals. And we talked about this on our Pick'em show, which you could watch all this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Maybe check your local listings.
Early Sunday.
But. I don't believe it's on Friday, but it is on 9 a.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Eastern, and 11 p.m. Eastern, and you can do the math after that. And then, yes, it is on Sunday morning as well, I think 6
a.m. All right, so Saturday and Sunday. Anyway, we talked about what is like a who-do-you-trust scenario. The Niners feeling a little better about themselves, scoring some points and almost pulling off that game last Thursday. But then you got the Cardinals, 1-2, dispiriting loss to the Cowboys at home. And now they're at home again, needing a win at 1-2. And there's desperation. Desperation, Mark, is a powerful thing.
I feel like the Cardinals, when healthy, could play with almost anyone in the league. And we saw that early on against the Cowboys. I think the biggest key here is to not have – A, you don't put Carson Palmer into a situation where he has to move with his feet or where he's lying on his back and they're getting Mike Iupati back, 100% chance, he said, to play Sunday. And the Cardinals feel like they're going to get left tackle DJ Humphreys back. I think that automatically stabilizes an offense that is a big problem because I don't like any of their running backs. It's essentially channeled all through Larry Fitzgerald at this point, but they did move the ball against Dallas despite their offensive line injuries last week.
They're a limited team on both sides of the ball, and I want to see some of the defensive players. You know, we heard a lot, and I talked up Tyrann Mathieu in the offseason, and he did make a game-winning, you know, a huge interception in this season, so it's not like he hasn't been there, but I'd like to see him be a little more active. You know, him and Patrick Peterson, it's weird that Tyven Branch is making more plays
win
in
some
the secondary
games
than them.
All right, moving on, the Philadelphia Eagles, 2-1, and they had, of course, a dramatic win when their kicker, Jake Elliott, drilled a 61-yarder to beat the Giants. In fact, real quick, Erica, I know the Eagles tweeted out the Spanish language broadcast of Elliott's game winner. You guys want to hear that? Sometimes that's fun.
Yes.
Elliott! Sí! Lo ganó Jake Elliott! 61 yardas!
Well, he said yes out of the gate. That I got.
There you go. That was I knew every that word there, by the way. You guys not as plugged in?
Well,
the bilingual
there is a time in around – it was around 1998. I will say that I took a mind-altering drug in New York City and rode the subway system and could literally read Spanish on these Spanish subway signs. And I am not kidding. I was doing it with a friend. And
it was also illegal. It was a legal over-the-counter.
This is 98. Well, can't touch me.
Mr. Sessler, come with us.
Can't touch me.
All right, so the Eagles 2-1 after that dramatic win. They traveled to – I don't believe that, by the way, but I love the story. The Los Angeles Chargers winless, and, you know, what can you say? I mean, Doug Peterson has the Eagles scoring points on offense, and the Chargers, they just can't – they can't get out of their own way.
I need to – see more out of the Eagles team, even though I did pick them to win the division. They're one of the teams I feel like I have no feel for yet what they really are on a week-to-week basis, and they've had a lot of injuries. Michael Kendricks has stepped up and is playing well for them at linebacker. But when you look at the Chargers, you kind of do know what you're getting a little bit out of their defense, which is it's soft in the middle. You're getting some Gus Bradley complaints already from the Chargers fans, just like there were complaints about him, you know, in Jacksonville, that you can run on this team, and that's a great recipe for the Eagles, because I think they really did find – I think they want to be a running team. But, you know, with Wentz as a guy who can threaten you running, and I think their line is really set up to be a good run-blocking team.
Well, we finally saw that last week with LeGarrette Blount.
And Smallwood.
I don't understand this Chargers team. I feel like we saw, you know, Melvin Gordon got hurt at halftime and missed almost all of the second half. Opened up looking great. I thought it was his best half of the season, and I think that's what they want to be. I don't think they want to keep putting everything on Phillip Rivers' plate over and over. But it felt to me watching them again just sort of this desperation offense where you have all this talent and that no one really seems to be the core anchoring force. They're just zinging the ball downfield left and right. And I'd rather see a more balanced offense where maybe, you know, Keenan Allen plays a more significant role week to week versus just deep shots over and over.
And on the other side of the ball, it has been, yes, some of our fantasy friends here at NFL Media and anybody else that plays fantasy football, it's been an apocalypse at the tight end position this year. One guy that has been active and is a guy you can get behind, Zach Ertz, who leads the NFL in targets, receptions, receiving yards, first downs. Him and Carson Wentz, they could be a tandem for a long time. We'll see if they.
Well, that's how Doug Peterson used Ertz in Kansas City, Travis Kelce.
One thing with the Chargers is just that Jason Verrett is out for the season when we haven't really talked about it. And that's one of the – they're a better team in theory than they are in practice because Jason Verrett, who we think of, okay, you got a good secondary, but he's never on the field. He's missed more than half the games in his career, and he's going to miss the rest of the season.
Moving on, the New York Giants winless after that loss to the Eagles now travel to Tampa to face the Buccaneers, who are a bit Jekyll and Hyde at this stage, Mark. They looked every bit as good as you thought they would in their first game in week two against the Bears, and then just kind of got whooped up on by the Vikings last week. There was even maybe a little bit of shade being thrown by Mike Evans on social media that maybe he was open a lot and just was not being properly targeted by his
that.
Buddy Jameis Winston. So a little bit of juice around the Bucs. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I could imagine, yeah, you said Jekyll and Hyde, they're probably going to bounce back, and the Giants are in a place of desperation. But if I want to make a case for New York, what they did in the final, you know, 20 minutes against the Philadelphia Eagles, their passing game finally woke up. And I watched a Bucs team that got literally evaporated by the Vikings offense. That the
disappeared.
Ryan Smith, the Bucs cornerback, was literally destroyed by Stephen Diggs last week. It was one of the messiest performances I've seen by a secondary.
Stephon Diggs.
It was embarrassing.
He's gone.
It was
old Stevie Diggs just destroying.
He's been destroyed.
Stephon Diggs. It was embarrassing. And honestly, the Giants left a lot of points on the board in that game. So I don't know. I would Tampa Bay can be taken through the air. And if New York can, if Eli Manning can start the way he did last week and if they can stay as hot towards the end, they can make this another game that they'll probably lose in heartbreaking fashion.
Well, Ryan Smith is Brent Grimes' replacement, and Grimes will be back this week. So that's a huge
that helps.
Plus. But Quan Alexander and Lavonte David look like they're both going to be out again. And that really takes out, you know, what was interesting about this defense is you had playmakers on the defensive line with McCoy, and then that linebacker group is kind of the core of that defense, and now you don't have both your guys. They're really not the same team.
Am I crazy? I really think the Giants are going to win this game.
It's not crazy.
It's not crazy at all. I mean, the Bucs also, they missed Doug Martin.
They're not
right
heavy
now.
Favorites in this game, so it shows that the Bucs people are wondering about them. Because they're off in that first week against the Bears, the offense struggled. You know, they didn't need to do much, but the offense really hasn't gotten going.
Hey there. Hey you, area 8-year-old, still trying to figure out the alphabet, basic phonetics, and the larger world beyond your safe front door while you live in a swirl of looped, mind-numbing, fan-made videos of cute kittens on YouTube. How about you up your game? How about you look toward the east at the accomplishments of English philosopher, economist, and civil servant John Stuart Mill? At
Millie.
The age of 8, John Stuart Mill took up studying Latin texts, algebra theory, and the works of Euclid. Instead of being locked on some device like a freewheeling child zombie, Mill's spare time was composed of poring through dense historical texts. But only after the 8-year-old intellectual workhorse ripped through every commonly taught Latin and Greek author available to students of the day. By the age of 10, John Stuart Mill could read Plato with the ease of a drowsy parent cycling through Goodnight Moon. His father also urged 10-year-old John Stuart Mill to study and compose his own poetry. One of Mill's earliest poetic compositions was a continuation of the Iliad. Are you listening, lazy children of the modern day? He penned a sequel to the Iliad. When John Stuart Mill felt the urge to let his hair down, he dabbled in popular lighter fare such as Don Quixote and Robinson Crusoe. Dubbed the most influential English-speaking philosopher of the 19th century, Mill once famously told a crowd of teenage never-do-wells, One person with a belief is equal to a force of 99 who only have interests. Young children of America, dust off the cobwebs and get to work. Get on your skateboards, your unicycles, your dogs serving as small horses, and your $430 hoverboards, and zoom on over to Mr. Flame's high school economics class in The Hague, the Netherlands, today!
First of all, I don't know who greenlights those. I don't know how it helps Mr. Flame's class. A lot of information in there. It was comprehensive. The copy's going to get on one page. The page turn in the middle of the copy.
Dramatic, yeah.
Listen, I have to make it a large text. It's crazy stuff.
I'm just glad I don't have like an 8-year-old kid, or I'd be worried that was a large like subtweet at my children.
That was a composite of every 8-year-old American child today.
The Iliad ref was big time.
Luke's got
that's factual.
Luke's
by the
gotta
way,
got to be worried. He's what? He's 7 now.
He's good.
He's coming up to a big 8.
He's exempt from this.
All right, moving on. The Oakland Raiders 2-1. And now they take on – ooh, this is a saucy one. This must be the GM Tony game, like Greg said. They got the Denver Broncos.
It is. By the way, I have confirmed.
Okay, good. So this is the Raiders offense against the Broncos defense, Greg. You like Denver's chances. I know you do.
I do. I was thinking of locking this one up. I think this is the game of the week. I'm glad that Tony Romo's on it. I hope, our downstairs editor doesn't assign Mark to this game so I can watch it freely.
Editor.
You could just simply request it. I'm not going to get in your way.
Okay, maybe I'll request it. Because this is a big game for the Raiders. You come out after that primetime game, you want to show that that's not your offense. If you're Amari Cooper, I think you want to show that the drops that he's had all season and the mental errors. You know, on one, that first car interception, he slows down on his route. That type of stuff happens too much for him to really be a top-notch receiver. Their offensive line had, you know, an embarrassing game for them considering how good they are, and now they got to go up against what I think might be the best defensive line in the league. And you don't think of the Broncos that way, but the way they line up, Von Miller and Shaq Barrett are on the line of scrimmage. So you can call them a linebacker, I don't care. They're on the line of scrimmage, and Derek Wolfe and next to him Shelby Harris, who's come out of nowhere this year, are both really playing well. And these four players, they even played well in Buffalo for the most part. I think they could give Oakland problems again. It's a great matchup, and it's really kind of the way the Chiefs are playing right now. You don't want to fall to 2-2. If you're the Raiders, you don't want to lose two straight high-profile games. That would shake them up a little bit.
I think you summed it up perfectly. We talked last preview show about the Raiders having talent-wise maybe the most talent of any offense in the league. I mean, it starts with their two wide receivers, and who would have thought we would have seen what happened against Washington's secondary? Now you go deal with Denver's, which is, you know, on paper much better. And
Mile High madness.
I think playing in Denver is another, just like Buffalo, another underrated venue. And I think this is a gut check for the Raiders, because you're suddenly in a hole you never thought you'd be here at this point in the season.
No offense moves in the Rocky Mountain blizzard.
Marshawn Lynch, not a run over 15 yards this entire season.
This is a huge game.
I'm workshopping nicknames, guys. Just
what is this?
No fly zone, not my thing.
I didn't even put it together.
You can't march an offense through the Rocky Mountain blizzard. Not bad.
What about when it's sunny there? Yeah.
I don't know. Isn't it always a blizzard at the top of a mountain? Just like,
I mean, Rocky Mountain blizzard is that
big
works.
Time mountain?
It works.
Like an elite mountain? Isn't it always snowing up there?
This needs to be a Marshawn Lynch game, because the Broncos, they play dime defense, six defensive backs on the field, 57% of the time. So that's their defense. They're daring teams to run on them. And that's why I think that the front line's been so good. They put a lot of pressure on that front line, and teams haven't really run through them at all. They stuffed McCoy. They stuffed Zeke. Who else did they stuff? Gordon. They've been great stopping the run.
I got you, like, pointed at me, like, sticking it to me, like I've been an anti-dime defense guy for decades.
I can read
between the lines.
I have a couple thoughts, and then we got to move on Denver. First of all, Jamaal Charles definitely has juice. Three really
Love
nice
him.
Runs,
yeah.
Including that touchdown. He's basically the opposite of the AP effect in New Orleans. They got a veteran who's really helped their offense. And Trevor Siemian, I thought he actually played a pretty solid game. With the two picks, though, were like straight out of the Mark Sanchez playbook. I had to like do a double take because they were that bad.
It fell apart at the end for him.
Yeah, they were kind of really ill-fated decision-making and maybe over-trusting his physical abilities in that spot. So I'm not going to go crazy about it, but they were very bad passes, and you want to take that out of his repertoire. Let's move on to the Indianapolis Colts at the Seattle Seahawks. 2-1-2 games, and you got to like that Jake Brisket, who has essentially...
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
Whoever thought that drop would get as much mileage as it has. He has the potential now.
We'll be at the NFL honors as Jake Brisket picks up his second MVP award in the year 2024.
It's just being played over and over again, and we're all going mad. You know, if he is in position now as he travels to Seattle to face the Seahawks, where he could save the season or at least hand it over to Andrew Luck, who's starting to make some progress now, we're hearing. His return may not be imminent, but he's on the grid now. So you have that situation with the Colts. So they have a quarterback they can trust a little bit, which was not Scott Tolzien. And then you have the Seahawks, Mark, who are one of the mysteries of the NFL season. The offense, obviously. But I'm going to also bring up the defensive line, which once they got Sheldon Richardson was supposed to be to use a Sheckism, gangbusters, but they've been a league average unit. They're not making plays, and you're wondering what is going on with the Seahawks, period.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks ago, 159 yards on the ground given up. Last week, 195 to the Titans. My concern a little bit for the Colts is this matchup. It's in Seattle. It's prime time. Seattle wants to shake off a lot of the early critique they've got. I honestly think that matters in a game like this, and we could maybe just get a good old-fashioned Seattle wipeout type game. That said, the Colts do a lot of things well. I just don't know if what they do well is what Seattle doesn't. Like, Frank Gore, I think, has looked good this season, but I don't think that you look at them as a ground game at all. They're not. They're just a very average running team. And can they go away and make big plays down the field? T.Y. Hilton destroyed Cleveland's secondary last week, but now you're dealing with Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and Seattle's. Colts also got good pass rush against the Browns. I don't know what that means, except that Seattle is certainly – they can be victimized that way.
I think Russell Wilson should take some confidence, and the offensive line should, in the way that they played in Tennessee. It's not like those were garbage time points. They were never totally out of that game, and they put up a lot of points. Like that was a building block type of game. I think the Colts are playing over their head, and they played better at home than they will on the road, and this is a recipe for a wipeout for a Seahawks team that's just been mediocre. I mean, if you look at Football Outsiders right now, they have the 17th best offense and the 18th best defense. You do not expect to see 18th best defense out of the Seahawks.
But I can't think of a team that's more.
I don't know why.
I don't think they're comfortable with it. I think that's a problem to them. But they
Richardson
they always round, no he and also I think Richard
hasn't done much.
How about
Averill
Richard Sherman?
Much.
I think Richard Sherman last week lost his head, and I think the whole thing that affected that game. The Richard Sherman, 3 penalties in 1 play, and then he had another one later. It's just, come on. Like
Frank Clark hasn't done much.
Michael Bennett's not filling up the box score. Like, they got problems right now, and you wonder when they're going to get healthy. This feels like on Sunday night, and this is a team that's been playing big games for years now, that they'll get up and against an opponent like this, maybe get healthy a little bit. That's how I see it playing out.
Me too, but that won't even tell me anything.
It will. To get their mojo going a little bit, and maybe this feels like a perfect place for it to happen. If it doesn't,
this feels like a game that needs to be, that should be flexed, but it's not allowed to be in the first 4 weeks of the season.
They have the Rams the week after. That is interesting.
All right, finally, Monday Night Football. The Washington Redskins really evaporated. I'm going to use Mark's word there. Evaporated the Raiders off.
It doesn't really make sense.
Doesn't make sense, but it's fun. What is that when liquid turns into gas?
Yeah, I mean, in this case, I would see more just like it obliterated to something below dust.
It's sad that like none of us are confident enough to like tell
I
you
know
that's
what
wrong.
I know what evaporation
liquid
means.
Into vapor. You know,
vapor. Yeah.
And then it goes.
What did
in,
I say?
It get
gas.
Then that's it helps create the clouds, and the clouds they bring the rain back in to the earth.
How does rain work? So they're 2-1, and now they get the Chiefs. At home,
cut that for a drop there, Timposi.
How does rain work?
3-0. I love these Chiefs. I'm fully confident that they're gonna beat up on many, many, many teams this week. And I'll tell you what, I'm not gonna lock it up because locking up the Chiefs at home feels a little cheap. But
they're playing a good team. I don't think that'd be cheap.
Well, I like our lock off anyway. I like that we have another lock off. But I feel really good, Greg, that the Chiefs again are going to take care of business and move to 4-0. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I won't, because I believe that they'll do it, but I don't believe it'll be some comfortable game. I think because they're 3-0 and they have been impressive and consistent, maybe we make a little more out of the last 2 weeks, especially Alex Smith, than we need to. They've just looked like the Chiefs. You know, they've been in fourth quarter games that are tight. You close strong against the Eagles. You close strong against the Chargers. You have different ways to win games. I don't think this is a team that's going to go out and win 14 games. I just don't. Or 13 games. I think they're going to have their losses along the way.
Yeah, I think you need to disrupt Kansas City and probably really win the turnover battle for a chance to beat them, because there isn't really a week-to-week weak spot for them. They're very well coached. I think Andy Reid is absolutely in his groove. I mean, you're watching them running the pistol, the inverted wishbone. Every play, it's something different.
Tony Romo said the Patriots, you know, that they stole a play from the Chiefs, that, you know, they're so impressed with.
Yeah, they really are. I do say this about Washington, because you would have thought, oh, they're going to need Terrell Pryor to do X, Y, and Z for them to exist week to week. Jamison Crowder, I thought, would have a huge season. He's not off to a huge start. Terrell Pryor has not been in sync with Kirk Cousins. Jordan Reed is not someone you can count on week to week. And then the Redskins find a guy like Chris Thompson, and they're using other players to
be very effective.
They're very well coached on offense.
They have upside. You know, as you're talking about that, it makes a good point. Like, they have upside to get a lot better. And you know, them and the Bills were criticized about as much as any two teams in the league this offseason in this room, and here they are 2-1. They're both looking pretty good. I was trying to figure out what is different about this defense, and it's just a lot of solid contributors. You know, Scott McLuhan like Dave Gettleman, the moves that he made are working out pretty well. DJ Swearinger, you know, Zach Brown they picked up. They've kept Junior Gallette forever, and finally he's playing some meaningful snaps for them. It's just a lot of guys playing a little bit.
What was it? Wishbone? What was it? What are
the
they
inverted
running?
Wishbone.
Oh.
I mean, the Niners under Harbaugh, remember, they would used to go crazy. They use 12 different, like, sets and series and formations every half. And I think the Chiefs are kind of that diverse and that experienced to be doing that kind of thing.
I had a extroverted wishbone joke all queued up, but we got to go.
Okay.
It was a really good one, though, guys.
Bring it back Sunday night. It will still be fresh.
Yeah, it was like a really outgoing, self-assured wishbone. It's feeling good about itself. All right, let's go. We have to move on out of here. Make sure you check out NFL Pick'em, airing Saturdays and Sundays. Check your DVR, local listings, and give us some support. And also NFL.com/ATN video. You can find all our video content, including our video Tuesday show. Good stuff. But now we got to go. This is Dan Hansis signing off for The Quiet Storm, The Old Boss, and The Loose Cannon Behind the Glass. Well, here we go, Mark. We're headed to week 4, almost the quarter pole. Till Sunday!